Hi, Neil Lazarus here, and welcome to another podcast. I'm very excited with this podcast. We are speaking to Professor Gil Troy. For those of you who don't know Professor Gil Troy, the guy is the guru on Zionism. And really, this is a fascinating talk. If you've wanted to know about, is Zionism relevant? Is it racist? Isn't it nationalist? Isn't it white colonialist? That's what we talked about in this interview. But before we go to that interview, I always say, and I keep to my promise, other than to replace a creaky chair, listen to this. Can you hear that? That's ridiculous. I need to get a new chair before recording the next podcast. But the reality is that I asked you to send in any thoughts that you had on the last podcast. And people did. So I wanted to play you one. This is from a listener. He is talking about the interview that we had on the last podcast with Rachel Corazine regarding the issue about Holocaust and concentration camps and whether it was right or wrong to call immigration camps in the States concentration camps. If you remember, Rachel Corazine was dismissing, saying that it wasn't important, should just deal with the issue of immigration and don't get fixated on the name. I was arguing that this is wrong. I think that the misuse of Nazi terminology and Holocaust imagery belittles what actually happened in the Holocaust, which was a unique event until today. They're not shooting people in immigration centers in the United States. They're not burning the bodies. They're not. So let's just, you know, relax a little. It's wrong. Let's condemn it, but let's use the right terminology. But this was the response I got. After this, we're going to be listening to Gil Troy.
Hi, Neil. Thank you for sharing the interview. As she eloquently put it, this is not a rewriting of history. History is something that we have to learn from. Naming the mass internment of people a concentration camp does not take away from what we suffered as Jews, either throughout history or through the atrocities of the Holocaust. I'm glad that she gave examples of different forms, not only of the Holocaust camps themselves, but of different atrocities committed in recent world history. It's important to remember that the force of Never Again is not exclusive towards us. No matter what you call them, the mass internment is wrong. And the focus on the nuance of the term in use makes us, even for a second, lose focus on the lack of humanity being displayed.
Interesting stuff, no? So anyway, this is now the interview which we recorded with Professor Gil Troy. Excellent discussion about Zionism. Is it relevant? Hope you enjoy it. Like I said, I'm going to be on the road. And keep in touch via awesomeseminars.com if you want to have a seminar of mine, or at the same time you could do something via the video conferencing. Doing a lot of that recently. I've also put up a video vlog of this on YouTube, so you may be interested to actually watch it. Interested to hear what you think about that. Do you want to see the videos each time as well as listen to it, or do you prefer just downloading it and listening to it as a podcast? Also, throw me some subjects you're interested in. Send them my direction. A couple of you asked me, by the way, what was a way of recording an MP3 to send it to me? A couple of things. Easy. If you have a smartphone, you can just record. I'm sure there's many apps there. If you have a mic on your computer, on your desktop, there's a site which is called, where was it? Ah, there it is. It is called onlinevoicerecorder.com. There's online, then there's a little slash voice, little slash recorder.com. Google that, and that's online. It's free, and then you can just send, edit, do whatever you like with your recordings, and send them to me, and we'll play them like you just heard. Anyway, let's go over to Gil Troy. Enough of this, and hopefully I'll see you out there at your university or in Israel sometime soon. Oh, last point, I know I'm wittering, is thank you for all of you who also just signed up to the online courses we have opened. We've got 3-4 major courses online. Check them out via our awesome seminars. Let's turn the conversation over to Gil Troy.
Gil, good morning. What you just dropped there. How are you doing, my friend?
Excellent. How are you?
Thank you very much for joining us and joining the podcast. If there's one question I get a lot of when I do my seminars abroad, one question would be, is Zionism, what is it? I'm against it because it's an ism. How would you respond to that? Someone who's like, how could you, can you give me a definition of what Zionism is in a sentence or two so we really get what it is?
But before I get to that, let me just say one thing, which is that people have no problem with liberalism, individualism, feminism. There are all kinds of isms that are certainly not only okay, but politically correct and wonderful. But Zionism somehow becomes the problem. Zionism, at its most simple, is the notion that A, the Jews are a people, not just a religion. B, that as a people, we have ties to a particular homeland. Eretz Yisrael doesn't preclude others to having ties to that homeland. And C, we have the right, like 191 other nations in the United Nations, to establish a state on that homeland. So basically, it's Am Yisrael, the Jewish people, Eretz Yisrael, the land, the homeland of the Jewish people, and Medinat Yisrael, the state of the Jewish people.
But is it still relevant today? That's the issue. In other words, right. Many of these philosophies, etc., were once suitable. But do the Jewish people really need Zionism today?
I think the Jewish people need Zionism more than ever. Certainly we needed it in the 1940s to establish a state. But now we have a dual challenge. One, Zionism is to continue to perfect that state. And it's funny, people, you want to love Israel, hate Israel, it's a country. And you can disagree, there's no country that's perfect. But Zionism, when you say I'm anti-Zionist, are you saying, first of all, that we're not a people? You've decided. Are you saying that we don't have this historic tie to the homeland? You've decided. Or are you saying that, those who want to perfect Israel, either from the left or from the right, are somehow illegitimate? So the state of Israel needs Zionism the same way that America needs healthy liberal democracy and England needs a healthy liberal democracy. And we might call it Americanism in the United States. We're less likely to call it Britishism in England because it's a different story and a different background. So that's one piece of it. The second piece is that in an age where most Jews, especially young Jews, don't believe in God, in an age where most Jews, especially young Jews, don't follow kashrut and don't follow the halakha, the traditional Jewish law, what makes us a people? What keeps us going? Our peoplehood. And Zionism, what I call identity Zionism, is the movement to bring back a sense of pride and, most important to me, a sense of mission to Judaism, whether you're religious or not. Whether you're
isn't that nationalism?
Or Israel. Sorry.
Isn't that nationalism?
Of course it's nationalism. But one of the things I want to do is I want to bring back pride to the word nationalism. I know I'm making trouble, but I'm an American historian. That's my main job. I cannot explain to you the history of the United States. I cannot explain to you the great successes of the United States. I cannot explain to you the Civil War, World War II, the great inventions, the multiculturalism, the way the United States has changed without using the word nationalism. As a Jew, I can tell you that nationalism is a neutral tool. In the 1940s, we experienced nationalism at its most horrific, most evil through the Holocaust. In 1948, we experienced nationalism at its most liberating. So the notion today that nationalism is the new N-word, that we can't use that word either, is in a sense a repudiation of the major constitutive force that organizes the 191 countries in the United Nations. Nationalism is simply saying that human beings connect.
And when did the Jewish people become a nation? Aren't they like a religion like anybody else, like the Christians, the Muslims? You don't get Christians wanting states. You don't have Muslim. I mean, there's Muslim states, but it's not the same issue. So when did the Jews become a people? I just thought they were a religion.
When we became a people, when we became Jews, we became a people. Michael Walzer, the great liberal philosopher, says, I will not apologize for the fact that we're anomalous, that we're different, that we're strange. It's true. When I meet my Christian friends, when I host them at my home in Jerusalem, I say, Christianity is a religion. Judaism is an Oreo cookie. And just like the Oreo cookie mixes the cookie part and the cream part, and that's what makes it an Oreo cookie, Judaism mixes the nation and the religion. Tell me the story of Abraham. It's a story of God, religious moment, saying, I will make of you, not a great religion, but I'll make of you a great people. You go to the Passover Seder. Is it a religious moment or a political moment, a national moment? The answer is yes, both. The Western Wall. Is it a religious symbol or a national symbol? The answer is yes, both. And that's the confusion of Judaism, but that's also the joy of Judaism and the opportunity of Zionism to say, as identity Zionists, we have this double heritage. And how do we make sure that the religion strengthens the nation strengthens the religion, and we're open to those who just go through the religious porthole and those who just go through the national door?
No, but I want to push you a bit. I mean,
sure.
The issue of Zionism solving the problem of anti-Semitism within the early 1900s, we saw Herzl, so on and so forth. Today, how relevant is it really? I mean, look, there's two issues. One is, I've been to West Palm Beach, and with all respect, the Jews of West Palm Beach are not suffering. Mm-hmm. I wish I suffered like the Jews of West Palm Beach. And the reality is, if we define Zionism just as an answer to anti-Semitism, isn't Israel irrelevant today for the vast majority of people, where life's good?
It's a funny thing, because in some ways, the cheap answer to justify Zionism is to yell and scream about anti-Semitism and to say, we need anti-Semitism. We need Zionism more than ever because anti-Semitism is surging, and we need it because of Pittsburgh, and we need it because of what happened in San Diego. And I won't go there. In fact, I spoke to the American Zionist Movement Convention in New York, and I said, don't you dare hijack these horrific events to justify Zionism. I want to make the harder argument. I want to make the harder argument that as nice as it is to live in West Palm Beach, and I'll see you and raise you and go to Palm Beach or to Beverly Hills. Zionism, Judaism, are movements about meaning, are movements about community, are movements about something bigger than the latest trend on YouTube or the latest sale at the mall or the newest car or the biggest house. And it's true. Especially in the United States, we have tremendous prosperity, and I'm not against it. I have a lovely home myself, and I have a lovely life. But the question is, what do we fill our lives with? Do we fill it with values? Do we fill it with a sense of connectedness? And I'm not arrogant enough to say that Judaism or Zionism is the best way or the only way. It's my way. It's our way.
But isn't there an irony?
Conversation an irony. About Sorry.
The irony is that today, once Zionism was an answer to anti-Semitism, today Zionism is causing anti-Semitism.
Anti-Semites cause anti-Semitism. Hatred causes anti-Semitism. I won't go there. I won't accept the fact that because people are black, that causes racism. Hatred is hatred. And we have a tendency to take it on. We have a tendency, oh my goodness, what did we do wrong? But Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the great U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, said, I'm not interested in the accused when we talk about anti-Semitism or anti-Zionism. I'm interested in the accuser. And he put the finger on those who hate, not on those who are hated. And look, you see it. When Jews are capitalists, we're hated. And when we're communists, we're hated. When we're assimilationists, we're hated. And when we stand out, we're hated. When we have a state, we're hated. And we're stateless, we're hated. For all the problems we have today, I'm much happier and feel lucky to be living in 2019, 2020, 2021, than in 1933, 1943. And so let's look at it in perspective. I know it's popular to say, oh, it's all about anti-Semitism and it's all about Israel's fault. I don't do it. I won't buy it. I'm a Zionist. Zionism has given me the pride to stand up strong and stand up tall, but not be defensive.
But what are the basis of your analysis of Judaism could be questioned. Your argument is open to interpretation. In other words, we have people such as Nure Carter who are saying, let me quote you, I actually took it from their site, says, one of the basis of Judaism is we're a people in the exile, and that's by divine creation. So they reject the very Zionist movement, are very vocal about it, saying it doesn't represent a Jewish perspective. How would you answer those critics of Nure Carter?
Just because they have a black beard that's longer than mine or fuller than mine or exists and a big black hat, it doesn't mean that they're right. And it doesn't mean that they have the right to monopolize Judaism or impose their definition of Judaism. Read the Torah. Read the Talmud. Look at our holidays. I defy our friends from Nure Carter to take out Israel. Take out references to peoplehood. Take out references to statehood. So there are two parts to this conversation, to this argument. One is they're saying, oh, you know, we don't need it in exile as somehow holy. But look how many mitzvot, how many commandments of the Torah are based on being in the land, returning to the land. And if somehow we ended up in exile and we attribute it to God, why don't we also attribute to God the fact that we're back here in Israel? And they've been born, almost every single one of them, if they're 71 and younger, they've been born into a world where there is a state of Israel. And so why don't they say, wow, this is a divine moment. That's certainly what Rav Kook's followers said. That's certainly what many religious Zionists say today. So I'm not intimidated by these people. And I look at the mainstream of Judaism today, the main consensus. And by the way, there's a parallel to the extreme ultra-Orthodox and the extreme universalists. And both of them are saying, ah, that's not Judaism to have Zionism so central. I'm saying, no, I'm sorry. I don't know of a Judaism without Zionism. I can't tell the story of Abraham. I can't tell the story of Passover. I can't tell I can't use the prayers. I can't read the Torah if I have to skip over every part that's connected to Israel, peoplehood, our collective identity. And it's just about belief.
But some of your later works and later writings really dug up some of the real documents within the early Zionist movement. And from all your collection of books, it really is a pleasure reading some of the material you've put together. The Zionist idea, which you redid again. It wasn't your first idea, but you took the book and redid it, which was great read. Look, isn't Zionism really the result of white colonialists? In other words, is white, is nationalism, is colonialism, is based in the 1900s. As white colonialism, it's not really something which should be attractive.
Well, first of all, thank you for the very kind compliments and sending love right back at you. You're really a hero in all that you do. And the fact that you're able to be so substantive and also funny is one of the great gifts that you have, that you share with many students. When you wander around Israel and you see light-skinned Palestinians, and you've seen dark-skinned Israelis. And in fact, we forget, because we're so stuck in our British-American Ashkenazi bubble, that the majority of the population in Israel today is not white and not part of that European, quote-unquote, I'll get to that in a second, colonialist movement, but in fact is the core of the 850,000 Jews and their descendants who were kicked out of the Arab world, kicked out of the Muslim world. Where were they going to go? They came here. And they built a life here. So this whole notion that this is a story of black and white is very, very suspicious to me. It's particularly suspicious to me because back in the day when it was cool to be white, nobody called Jews whites. Now that it's cool to target whites, all of a sudden people are trying to make us white. And all these definitions are artificial.
Right? But there is some basis there. I mean, if you have, for example, a lot of the early years, the whole issue with the Mabarot, the whole issue with Yemenite children being stolen from their parents. Even in the last week or so, we've seen some of the worst race riots we've ever seen in the history of Israel with Ethiopian Jewry. Doesn't that give credibility to this idea that the status or status quo of Israel, white, Ashkenazi, European, and that Zionism reflects that?
One of the things I did in updating my book, The Zionist Ideas, was to open up the conversation and make sure that we didn't just have the Ashkenazi voices, the quote-unquote white voices, but to bring in voices from Jerba, bring in voices from the Sephardi lands, bring in voices from the Arab world, from the Muslim world, in addition to bringing in women, in addition to bringing in gays, in addition to broadening it. Look, it goes back to what I was saying about the difference between Zionism and Israel. Does Israel have problems? Of course. Is Israel imperfect? Of course. Does the Zionist movement at various moments have leaders who had blind spots? Of course. But when we get to the essence of the issue, do we completely invalidate the United States of America because there's racism there and because in the Constitution itself there was racism, or do we change it? So do I work very hard to make sure that we reach out to our Ethiopian brothers and sisters and make sure that we are all about blue and white, not black versus white? Absolutely. But can I also point out that never in history has there been a mass importation of blacks from Africa to a country, except when Israel had all those airlifts, those Ethiopian airlifts. Why? Because we were brothers and sisters, regardless of skin color. Has it worked out perfectly? Of course not. But that was the Zionist idea. The Zionist idea is the ingathering of the exile. The Zionist idea was, if these people are suffering there, it's my responsibility. And as a taxpayer, I'm going to pay for it. I wish the integration was smoother, and I look forward to a day 20 years from now when we look back on these awful riots this week as an anomaly, and we've got work to do. But that's what I said about Zionism. Part of my Zionism is perfecting the state, not giving up on it.
I agree with you. I mean, I think that very much this concept of comparing what happened in the last week to the Black Lives Matter in the States is really quite horrendous. I mean, people forget history. As far as the blacks of America were brought to America as slaves, we're bringing Ethiopian Jewry back home. Really, an attempt to seek freedom. May have not been a smooth journey. That, as you say, is Israel still developing. But perhaps as we start to run out of time, perhaps two last questions. One is, first of all, is anti-Zionism today anti-Semitism?
You can make an intellectual distinction between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, but you have to work really, really hard. And most anti-Zionists don't do the work. And most anti-Zionists tap into that long, ugly tradition of stereotypes and images. And so is it theoretically possible to distinguish? Yes. But all too often, and I go to my friend and teacher, Natan Sharansky, who talks about, is there demonization? Is there delegitimization? Is there double standards? Are the tools that have been used to single out the Jew over the millennia now being used to single out the Jewish state? Has the Jewish state become the collective Jew, the scapegoat? Too aggressive if it's aggressive, too passive if it's passive. Always and this obsession of the world with this one small little country doesn't pass the anti-Semitism smell test. So yes, you can make a case, but on the whole, most anti-Zionists, and certainly when I look at the BDS movement, I look at the boycott movement, I look at the way they are so obsessed with Israel, the way they exaggerate Israel, the way they think, oh, if we only solve the Israel problem, then all the other problems in the world would be solved, the way they can reduce anything Israel does to some kind of nefarious move, that's good old-fashioned anti-Semitism. That's good old-fashioned Jew hatred. So is there a lot of Jew hatred in anti-Zionism? Absolutely. Do we see that there's only one country whose very legitimacy is robbed again and again? We're living in now what I call the era of the Trump opportunity. Many of my left-wing American Jewish friends hate Donald Trump, detest Donald Trump, abhor Donald Trump, but they're not giving up on America. They're not part of delegitimization derby where we say, oh, I dislike the president, therefore I'm leaving the country. Why is it that with Israel we say, I dislike Bibi, the prime minister, or I dislike the occupation, therefore I not only do I give up on the country, but I give up on its very right to exist, the very nationhood of the Jewish people, the very rights of us to define ourselves. Whoa! That's going from policy problems and headaches and mistakes and sins that we make to sinning against us by robbing us of who we are and being arrogant enough to say that you have the right to define me rather than giving me the right to define myself. Just as, by the way, and I offend my right-wing audiences all the time by saying my intense hatred of the anti-Zionists, my anti-anti-Zionists, makes me respect Palestinian nationalism. Doesn't mean I approve of everything Palestinian nationalism does, but I will never disrespect Palestinian identity because I know that nationalism is part of the identity game. And by the way, going back to the isms, if isms are no good, how come Palestinian nationalism is holy?
Perhaps finally, do you think that Zionism, as a Jewish national movement, obsesses on Jewish national ideas, history, mythology, flags, symbols, future, do you think is blind, is, and probably will be blind to Arabs?
I think in 1948, there was certain blindness to the realities and the complexities of the Middle East.
But before that, I'm talking about even like the Zionist thinkers.
And among the Zionist thinkers, as we say in Hebrew, yesh v'yesh, there were some who were blind. There were some who actually from the time they were writing about Israel and Zionism, were dreaming of Israel and writing about Zionism, they were engaging with the Arabs. And let's look at the early Chalutzim, the early pioneers. They often dressed like Arabs, not cultural appropriation, not disrespect, but to learn and connect to their new brothers and sisters. Read Theodore Herzl's novel, Altneuland, Old New Land, and his vision is that the revolution that comes to the Middle East through the Jewish state will also benefit the Arabs. And by the way, on his agenda, as he says, and then we also have to help the blacks in Africa because only the Jews with our history of oppression understand what they've gone through or can begin to understand, and we have a responsibility to help them too. So have we always been perfect in our relations with Arabs? No, but first of all, I say find me a better example of a country which has been so complicated, which has been often attacked, that has nevertheless given Arab, Israeli Arabs more and more rights. Compare the state of Israeli Arabs in 2019 to 1999 to 1949. Tremendous success, tremendous progress. And that's ultimately my question. My question about Zionism and Israel is this. Where are the trend lines? Are we safer? Are we happier? Are we freer? Are we more humane? Are we more democratic? Are we more prosperous? Are the trend lines on the whole going ahead or going backwards? And what I see a miracle. I see a country created by people who were the most traumatized people in the world, who could have just been able to turn in and give up. And instead, they created poetry in motion. They created this country that's not perfect, but it's always striving. David Ben-Gurion was asked in 1966, are you pleased with this country? This country you imagined, did it fill your ideals? He said, not yet. We're not yetters. We're still dreaming. We're still hoping. That's the Zionist idea. That's the Zionist dream.
So, Gil, thank you very much for joining us. And you've reminded me that when I sit in the traffic of Jerusalem as they rebuild the city, really we're seeing Zionism at work. Jews building a new country. Gil, thank you. Always a pleasure.
And keep up your great work.
Catch up soon. Thank you. Gil, good morning. What you just dropped there. How are you doing, my friend?
Excellent. How are you?
Thank you very much for joining us and joining the podcast. If there's one question I get a lot of when I do my seminars abroad, one question would be, is Zionism, what is it? I'm against it because it's an ism. How would you respond to that? Someone who's like, how could you do, can you give me a definition of what Zionism is in a sentence or two so we really get what it is?
But before I get to that, let me just say one thing, which is that people have no problem with liberalism, individualism, feminism. There are all kinds of isms that are certainly not only okay, but politically correct and wonderful. But Zionism somehow becomes the problem. Zionism, at its most simple, is the notion that A, the Jews are a people, not just a religion. B, that as a people, we have ties to a particular homeland. Eretz Yisrael doesn't preclude others to having ties to that homeland. And C, we have the right, like 191 other nations in the United Nations, to establish a state on that homeland. So basically, it's Am Yisrael, the Jewish people, Eretz Yisrael, the land, the homeland of the Jewish people, and Medinat Yisrael, the state of the Jewish people.
But is it still relevant today? That's the issue. In other words, many of these philosophies, etc., were once suitable. But do the Jewish people really need Zionism today?
I think the Jewish people need Zionism more than ever. Certainly we needed it in the 1940s to establish a state. But now we have a dual challenge. One, Zionism is to continue to perfect that state. And it's funny, people, you want to love Israel, hate Israel, it's a country. And you can disagree, there's no country that's perfect. But Zionism, when you say I'm anti-Zionist, are you saying, first of all, that we're not a people? You've decided. Are you saying that we don't have this historic tie to the homeland? You've decided. Or are you saying that, those who want to perfect Israel, either from the left or from the right, are somehow illegitimate? So the state of Israel needs Zionism in the same way that America needs healthy liberal democracy and England needs a healthy liberal democracy. And we might call it Americanism in the United States. We're less likely to call it Britishism in England because it's a different story and a different background. So that's one piece of it. The second piece is that in an age where most Jews, especially young Jews, don't believe in God, in an age where most Jews, especially young Jews, don't follow kashrut and don't follow the halakha, the traditional Jewish law, what makes us a people? What keeps us going? Our peoplehood. And Zionism, what I call identity Zionism, is the movement to bring back a sense of pride and, most important to me, a sense of mission to Judaism, whether you're religious or not. Whether you're
Isn't that nationalism?
Sorry.
Isn't that nationalism?
Of course it's nationalism. But one of the things I want to do is I want to bring back pride to the word nationalism. I know I'm making trouble, but I'm an American historian. That's my main job. I cannot explain to you the history of the United States. I cannot explain to you the great successes of the United States. I cannot explain to you the Civil War, World War II, the great inventions, the multiculturalism, the way the United States has changed without using the word nationalism. As a Jew, I can tell you that nationalism is a neutral tool. In the 1940s, we experienced nationalism at its most horrific, most evil, through the Holocaust. In 1948, we experienced nationalism at its most liberating. So the notion today that nationalism is the new N-word, that we can't use that word either, is in a sense a repudiation of the major constitutive force that organizes the 191 countries in the United, what do you call it? United Nations. Nationalism is simply saying that human beings connect.
And when did the Jewish people become a nation? Aren't they like a religion like anybody else, like the Christians, the Muslims? You don't get Christians wanting states. You don't have Muslim. I mean, there's Muslim states, but it's not the same issue. So when did the Jews become a people? I just thought they were a religion.
When we became a people, when we became Jews, we became a people. Michael Walzer, the great liberal philosopher, says, I will not apologize for the fact that we're anomalous, that we're different, that we're strange. It's true. When I meet my Christian friends, when I host them at my home in Jerusalem, I say, Christianity is a religion. Judaism is an Oreo cookie. And just like the Oreo cookie mixes the cookie part and the cream part, and that's what makes it an Oreo cookie, Judaism mixes the nation and the religion. Tell me the story of Abraham. It's a story of God, religious moment. Is it a religious moment or a political moment, a national moment? The answer is yes, both. The Western Wall, is it a religious symbol or a national symbol? The answer is yes, both. And that's the confusion of Judaism, but that's also the joy of Judaism and the opportunity of Zionism to say, as identity Zionists, we have this double heritage. And how do we make sure that the religion strengthens the nation strengthens the religion, and we're open to those who just go through the religious porthole and those who just go through the national door?
No, but I want to push you a bit. I mean,
sure.
The issue of Zionism solving the problem of anti-Semitism within the early 1900s, we saw Herzl, so on and so forth. Today, how relevant is it really? I mean, look, there's two issues. One is, I've been to West Palm Beach, and with all respect, the Jews of West Palm Beach are not suffering. If we define Zionism just as an answer to anti-Semitism, isn't Israel irrelevant today for the vast majority of people, where life's good?
It's a funny thing, because in some ways, the cheap answer to justify Zionism is to yell and scream about anti-Semitism and to say, we need anti-Semitism. We need Zionism more than ever because anti-Semitism is surging, and we need it because of Pittsburgh, and we need it because of what happened in San Diego. And I won't go there. In fact, I spoke to the American Zionist Movement convention in New York, and I said, don't you dare hijack these horrific events to justify Zionism. I want to make the harder argument. I want to make the harder argument that as nice as it is to live in West Palm Beach, and I'll see you and raise you and go to Palm Beach or to Beverly Hills. Zionism, Judaism, are movements about meaning, car or the biggest house. And it's true, especially in the United States, we have tremendous prosperity, and I'm not against it. I have a lovely home myself, and I have a lovely life. But the question is, what do we fill our lives with? Do we fill it with values? Do we fill it with a sense of connectedness? And I'm not arrogant enough to say that Judaism or Zionism is the best way or the only way. It's my way. It's our way.
But isn't there an irony?
Conversation about me. Sorry.
The irony is that today, once Zionism was an answer to anti-Semitism, today Zionism is causing anti-Semitism.
Anti-Semites cause anti-Semitism. Hatred causes anti-Semitism. I won't go there. I won't accept the fact that because people are black, that causes racism. Hatred is hatred. And we have a tendency to take it on. We have a tendency, oh my goodness, what did we do wrong? But Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the great U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, said, I'm not interested in the accused when we talk about anti-Semitism or anti-Zionism. I'm interested in the accuser. And he put the finger on those who hate, not on those who are hated. And look, you see it. When Jews are capitalists, we're hated. And when we're communists, we're hated. When we're assimilationists, we're hated. And when we stand out, we're hated. When we have a state, we're hated. And when we're stateless, we're hated. For all the problems we have today, I'm much happier and feel lucky to be living in 2019, 2020, 2021 than in 1933, 1943. And so let's look at it in perspective. I know it's popular to say, oh, it's all about anti-Semitism and it's all about Israel's fault. I don't do it. I won't buy it. And that's because I'm a Zionist. Zionism has given me the pride to stand up strong and stand up tall.
Your argument is open to interpretation. In other words, we have people such as Nuray Carter who are saying, let me quote you, I actually took it from their site. It says, one of the basis of Judaism is we're a people in the exile, and that's by divine creation. So they reject the very Zionist movement, are very vocal about it, saying it doesn't represent a Jewish perspective. How would you answer those critics of Nuray Carter?
Just because they have a black beard that's longer than mine or fuller than mine or exists and a big black hat, it doesn't mean that they're right. And it doesn't mean that they have the right to monopolize Judaism or impose their definition of Judaism. Read the Torah. Read the Talmud. Look at our holidays. I defy our friends from Nuray Carter to take out Israel. Take out references to peoplehood. Take out references to statehood. So there are two parts to this conversation, to this argument. One is they're saying, oh, you know, we don't need it, and exile is somehow holy. But look how many mitzvot, how many commandments of the Torah are based on being in the land, returning to the land. And if somehow we ended up in exile and we attribute it to God, why don't we also attribute to God the fact that we're back here in Israel? And they've been born, almost every single one of them, if they're 71 and younger, they've been born into a world where there is a state of Israel. And so why don't they say, wow, this is a divine moment. That's certainly what Rav Kook's followers said. That's certainly what many religious Zionists say today. So I'm not intimidated by these people. And I look at the mainstream of Judaism today, the main consensus. And by the way, there's a parallel to the extreme ultra-Orthodox and the extreme universalists. And both of them are saying, ah, that's not Judaism to have Zionism so central. I'm saying, no, I'm sorry. I don't know of a Judaism without Zionism. I can't tell the story of Abraham. I can't tell the story of Passover. I can't tell I can't use the prayers. I can't read the Torah if I have to skip over every part that's connected to Israel, peoplehood, our collective identity. And it's just about belief.
Now, some of your later works and later writings really dug up some of the real documents within the early Zionist movement. And from all your collection of books, it really is a pleasure reading some of the material you've put together in the Zionist idea, which you redid again. It wasn't your first idea, but you took the book and redid it, which was great read. Look, isn't Zionism really the result of white colonialists? In other words, it's white, it's nationalism, it's colonialism, it's based in the 1900s. As white colonialism, it's not really something which should be attractive.
Well, first of all, thank you for the very kind compliments and sending love right back at you. You're really a hero in all that you do. And the fact that you're able to be so substantive and also funny is one of the great gifts that you have, that you share with many students. When you wander around Israel and you see light-skinned Palestinians and you see dark-skinned Israelis, and in fact, we forget because we're so stuck in our British-American Ashkenazi bubble that the majority of the population in Israel today is not white and not part of that European, quote-unquote, I'll get to that in a second, colonialist movement, but in fact, is the core of the 850,000 Jews and their descendants who were kicked out of the Arab world, kicked out of the Muslim world. Where were they going to go? They came here and they built a life here. So this whole notion that this is a story of black and white is very, very suspicious to me. It's particularly suspicious to me because back in the day when it was cool to be white, nobody called Jews whites. Now that it's cool to target whites, all of a sudden people are trying to make us white. And all these definitions are artificial.
Right? But there is some basis there. I mean, if you have, for example, a lot of the early years, the whole issue with the Mabarot, the whole issue with Yemenite children being stolen from their parents. Even in the last week or so, we've seen some of the worst race riots we've ever seen in the history of Israel with Ethiopian Jewry. Doesn't that give credibility to this idea that the status or status quo of Israel, white, Ashkenazi, European, and that Zionism reflects that?
One of the things I did in updating my book, The Zionist Ideas, was to open up the conversation and make sure that we didn't just have the Ashkenazi voices, the quote-unquote white voices, but to bring in voices from Jerba, bring in voices from the Sephardi lands, bring in voices from the Arab world, from the Muslim world, in addition to bringing in women, in addition to bringing in gays, in addition to broadening it. Look, it goes back to what I was saying about the difference between Zionism and Israel. Does Israel have problems? Of course. Is Israel imperfect? Of course. Did the Zionist movement at various moments have leaders who had blind spots? Of course. But when we get to the essence of the issue, do we completely invalidate the United States of America because there's racism there and because in the Constitution itself there was racism, or do we change it? So do I work very hard to make sure that we that we reach out to our Ethiopian brothers and sisters and make sure that we are all about blue and white, not black versus white? Absolutely. But can I also point out that never in history has there been a mass importation of blacks from Africa to a country, except when Israel had all those airlifts, those Ethiopian airlifts. Why? Because we were brothers and sisters regardless of skin color. Has it worked out perfectly? Of course not. But that was the Zionist idea. The Zionist idea is the ingathering of the exile. The Zionist idea was, if these people are suffering there, it's my responsibility. And as a taxpayer, I'm going to pay for it. I wish the integration was smoother. And I look forward to a day 20 years from now when we look back on these awful riots this week as an anomaly. And we've got work to do. But that's what I said about Zionism. Part of my Zionism is perfecting the state, not giving up on it.
I agree with you. I mean, I think that very much this concept of comparing what happened in the last week to the Black Lives Matter in the States is really quite horrendous. I mean, people forget history. As far as, the blacks of America were brought to America as slaves, we're bringing Ethiopian Jewry back home, really an attempt to seek freedom. May have not been a smooth journey. That's, that as you say, is Israel still developing. But perhaps as we start to run out of time, perhaps two last questions. One is, first of all, is anti-Zionism today anti-Semitism?
You can make an intellectual distinction between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, but you have to work really, really hard. And most anti-Zionists don't do the work. And most anti-Zionists tap into that long, ugly tradition of stereotypes and images. And so is it theoretically possible to distinguish? Yes. But all too often, and I go to my friend and teacher, Natan Sharansky, who talks about, is there demonization? Is there delegitimization? Is there double standards? Are the tools that have been used to single out the Jew over the millennia now being used to single out the Jewish state? Has the Jewish state become the collective Jew, the scapegoat? Too aggressive if it's aggressive, too passive if it's passive. Always and this obsession of the world with this one small little country doesn't pass the anti-Semitism smell test. So yes, you can make a case, but on the whole, most anti-Zionists, and certainly when I look at the BDS movement, I look at the boycott movement, I look at the way they are so obsessed with Israel, the way they exaggerate Israel, the way they think, oh, if we only solve the Israel problem, then all the other problems in the world would be solved, the way they can reduce anything Israel does to some kind of nefarious move, that's good old-fashioned anti-Semitism. That's good old-fashioned Jew hatred. So is there a lot of Jew hatred in anti-Zionism? Absolutely. Do we see that there's only one country whose very legitimacy is robbed again and again? We're living in now what I call the era of the Trump opportunity. Many of my left-wing American Jewish friends hate Donald Trump, detest Donald Trump, abhor Donald Trump, but they're not giving up on America. They're not part of delegitimization derby where we say, oh, I dislike the president, therefore I'm leaving the country. Why is it that with Israel we say, I dislike Bibi, the prime minister, or I dislike the occupation, therefore I not only do I give up on the country, but I give up on its very right to exist, the very nationhood of the Jewish people, the very rights of us to define ourselves. Whoa! That's going from policy problems and headaches and mistakes and sins that we make to sinning against us by robbing us of who we are and being arrogant enough to say that you have the right to define me rather than giving me the right to define myself. Just as, by the way, and I offend my right-wing audiences all the time by saying, my intense hatred of the anti-Zionists, my anti-anti-Zionists, makes me respect Palestinian nationalism. Doesn't mean I approve of everything Palestinian nationalism does, but I will never disrespect Palestinian identity because I know that nationalism is part of the identity game. And by the way, going back to the isms, if isms are no good, how come Palestinian nationalism is holy?
Perhaps finally, do you think that Zionism, as a Jewish national movement, obsessed on Jewish national ideas, history, mythology, flags, symbols, future, do you think is blind, has been, is, and probably will be blind to Arabs?
I think in 1948, there was certain blindness to the realities and the complexities of the Middle East.
But even before that, I'm talking about even like the Zionist thinkers.
And among the Zionist thinkers, as we say in Hebrew, yesh v'yesh, there were some who were blind. There were some who actually from the time they were writing about Israel and Zionism, were dreaming of Israel and writing about Zionism, they were engaging with the Arabs. And let's look at the early Chalutzim, the early pioneers. They often dressed like Arabs, not cultural appropriation, not disrespect, but to learn and connect to their new brothers and sisters. Read Theodor Herzl's novel, Altneuland, Old New Land, and his vision is that the revolution that comes to the Middle East through the Jewish state will also benefit the Arabs. And by the way, on his agenda, as he says, and then we also have to help the blacks in Africa, because only the Jews with our history of oppression understand what they've gone through or can begin to understand, and we have a responsibility to help them too. So have we always been perfect in our relations with Arabs? No, but first of all, I say find me a better example of a country which has been so complicated, which has been often attacked, that has nevertheless given Arabs, Israeli Arabs more and more rights. Compare the state of Israeli Arabs in 2019 to 1999 to 1949. Tremendous success, tremendous progress. And that's ultimately my question. My question about Zionism and Israel is this. Where are the trend lines? Are we safer? Are we happier? Are we freer? Are we more humane? Are we more democratic? Are we more prosperous? Are the trend lines on the whole going ahead or going backwards? And what I see a miracle. I see a country created by people who were the most traumatized people in the world, who could have just been able to turn in and give up. And instead, they created poetry in motion. They created this country that's not perfect, but it's always striving. David Ben-Gurion was asked in 1966, are you pleased with this country? This country you imagined? Did it fill your ideals? He said, not yet. We're not yetters. We're still dreaming. We're still hoping. That's the Zionist idea. That's the Zionist dream.
So, Gil, thank you very much for joining us. And you've reminded me that when I sit in the traffic of Jerusalem as they rebuild the city, really we're seeing Zionism at work. Jews building a new country. Gil, thank you. Always a pleasure.
And keep up your great work.
Catch up soon. Thank you.